Good morning. Wonderful day to be together. I was listening to somebody this week who was making a comment that Cincinnati is one of the cloudiest cities in the United States during the winter months. Does that surprise anybody? But we're not going to let that get us down. Those who are gathered here today in the assembly, or those of you who are joining us online, we want to say thank you for taking the time out to contemplate the greatness of God, His work in our lives, and the goodness of Jesus. Thank you for being here on behalf of the Northeast Church. I want you to look at this picture. Yeah, I knew some of you would say, aw. I want to tell you right now, that's the best dog who ever lived. That's our Chipper. He lived 13 years old. He died the year that our son and daughter-in-law got married. No connection there, as far as I know, on that one. But one thing among many things that stood out in my life and experience with Chipper, by the way, that's a painting done by Jim Caveman, our own Jim Caveman. He took up painting at about 70 years old and has done some wonderful pictures. And this is one that sits in my office. But anyway, getting back to Chipper, he was one of the most patient dogs you will ever meet. It did not take us hardly any time to teach Chipper to sit and wait. So I could take a treat and I could set it down on the floor and I could tell Chipper, go sit over there, and I would step back from the treat, even to the point that he was closer to the treat than I was. And I would say, stay, stay, and he stayed right there. And sometimes I would wait like 2 or 3 minutes just to see if he'd wait. I'm terrible that way, right? And I'd say, go get the treat, and he would go get it. Some dogs are very patient. On the other hand, our son and daughter-in-law, they have a dog, and her name is Murray, and that is her picture right up here. She's cute, too. She's a cute dog, but she's a bad dog. Bad dog. She's about 3 years old, but she is a Labradoodle, so they're still puppies when they're 3 years old as Labradoodles. But they are known as the very smart dogs. If they're trained and lean in that direction, they can do a lot of things, but Murray is not patient at all. Never has been. Don't trust Murray around our food. About 3 Christmases ago, we were gathered at our house and had, and we buy this like once a year, but it's like, you know, $80 worth of meat, and it's a prime rib roast, and that baby was delicious. And so we had our Christmas dinner, us and the kids and the grandkids, and we proceeded to go into the dining room to eat, left that half of that prime rib roast on the island in the kitchen. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Somebody said, "Where's Murray?" And so we all rushed into the kitchen. And Murray was over there in the living room just having a ball with that rib roast. And I tell you, I struggled whether to pick that thing up and wash it off and to go ahead. You know, that was $40 worth of meat. You can train a dog to wait. Some dogs really don't learn to wait very well. But I think as human beings, we are not wired to wait. We're not. I don't think that's an innate part of our nature. You look at a baby. When a baby is hungry, what does a baby do? A baby cries. When a baby is uncomfortable most of the time or in pain, what does a baby do? That's the way God created us. When a baby needs a diaper change and is uncomfortable in a wet diaper, that baby lets you know. And so I don't think we're necessarily wired to wait, but we need to learn to wait, correct? That baby grows up and becomes an adult, and you don't want that adult always wanting to have everything right now, even if they need it right now. They may want it, they may need it, whatever the case is, it's not easy to wait. Now, think about a lot of kids out there right now waiting for Christmas. And if you're like I was as a kid, I mean, that week leading up to Christmas, it was so slow. It was unbelievably, painfully slow. Couldn't wait to go down the stairs and check up under the tree to see what Santa Claus brought and all of that stuff. Heard about one man who was trying to get his kids to wait, and they would get up real early and go down before the parents, and what he ended up doing with the two kids' bedroom that were across from each other, tying their doorknobs to where they couldn't open their doors in the morning. Now, don't call the fire marshal about that one. That's not a good idea if there was a fire. But it's something we struggle with all the time. I found myself last week turning left at the Kroger complex up there in Liberty Township, and I'm turning left out of that oil lube place, and I mean, traffic was just going back and forth and back and forth, and I had to turn left, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm looking for my spot to turn left. Ah, here comes a car, and I'm kind of inching, and I'm just starting to get, it's like 2 minutes. What was so important that I just couldn't sit there patiently, maybe offer a prayer to God or give thanks for something, but me, no, I finally just gave up in frustration. I'm just going to turn right and turn around and come back. You ever do that? And of course, the moment I decided to turn right, to turn back, I noticed as I was turning right, it was clear I could have turned left. We've been talking about waiting. We've been talking about a willingness to wait and how we wait. And so we don't always control what we have to wait for, but we can learn, can we not? We can learn how to wait, and we can learn what to do when we wait. We have a choice, don't we? Sometimes we don't act like it, but we do have a choice. So we've looked at some Bible characters. We began with Zechariah and Elizabeth. They had to learn to wait. He had to learn to wait. And he had to learn to wait, and not only wait, he had to learn some lessons about faith and about God keeping his promises. So he spent that length of time mute while he had a chance to think about the power of God and the God who keeps his promises. Joseph and Mary, they had to wait. They had to wait in surprise. They had to wait not knowing what the future held in every detail. They had to wait knowing that they were going to be parents to Emmanuel, God with us in the flesh, not knowing everything that was going to be involved in that awesome task. And so the basic message, I think, for us when we wait is we want to do the right thing. We want to obey God. We want to do the right thing right now. We want to do the next right thing. That's what they are learning. They are doing the next right thing, not knowing what the future holds, whether it's good or whether it's bad, or whether it's something they expected or whether it's something they did not expect, whether it was God calling them to a different path than they ever conceived in their lives. Willing and waiting. So this morning we're introduced to a man named Simeon. We don't have any details about his life other than the fact that God had made this amazing promise to him, revealed to him through the Holy Spirit, that he would not die before he witnessed in person, in the flesh, the Messiah. On this occasion, Joseph and Mary, after Jesus is circumcised and he is given the name Jesus, which means Yahweh is salvation. And after the days of purification, they would then go to the temple And it would be common with that firstborn son. That firstborn son would be consecrated to the Lord, and a sacrifice would be offered to those who were able to afford it. A larger animal like a lamb, but those who were poor would offer a couple of birds, which Mary and Joseph did. I don't know how he found out. I don't know how long Simeon had been waiting for the Messiah. I don't think it was weeks or days. My guess, it may have been a very, very long time. But he's there in the temple, and he's waiting to give witness and be a witness to the Messiah. And so Mary and Joseph, they go into the temple area, and here is this man who walks up to them. And he takes the child in his arms. And I'm wondering, what is Mary thinking here? What is Joseph thinking? I mean, have you ever had a child? Maybe you're out at the store, you have a cute baby. The Lutzes are here this morning. Cute little Naomi is here. And y'all haven't had much of a chance to be out. But under normal circumstances, you go to the supermarket, you go to Kroger, you go to the mall, you have a cute baby. What do people want to do? They want to come up to a baby, ooh, and ah, and just, oh, and then I talked to somebody the other day. They said, look, when they had their, and there's a beautiful little baby over there too. And they want to come up to it and, you know, get it. What about those people that want to come up and get in the baby's face? And then what about those people that want to actually reach down and touch your, it's a stranger. It's happened to, maybe happened to you before. And so there's a part of me that wants to say, well, I wonder what Mary and Joseph are thinking here. The gut reaction, who is this creepy old man that wants to pick up our kid? Now, I think God was revealing things to them, so I don't think that's what happened. But he waited. Let me ask you a question. Is it worth the wait? You say, what are you talking about? That's a pretty general question. Is it worth the wait? Now, you would answer that by saying, well, I guess it all depends on what you're waiting for, right? Sometimes it's worth it, sometimes it's not. Sometimes things we anticipate or want or long for, things that we're really looking forward to, we experience those things, and sometimes we have a letdown. It happens during Christmas time. Experts call it the post-Christmas blues. And so with all the activity and the family and the togetherness and the happiness and the joy of the season, there's this letdown when all those Christmas decorations are up and you're thinking about having to take them all down and everybody's gone, and then there's this letdown. What about going on a vacation? You ever been let down on a vacation? Have you ever been on a vacation and you're 5 days into it, it's a 7-day vacation, what are you thinking about day five? Huh? If you're like me, you're thinking, oh boy, vacation's halfway over. Gotta get back in the grind, gotta get back to reality. Yeah, you know, that's just how things work out sometimes. That's how we do with things we're waiting for. I've known some people who are waiting to retire, and when they retire, they are disappointed with retirement, even though they look forward to it, because it's not what they expected it to be. But I will tell you, in the case of Simeon, there is no letdown. There is no disappointment. He is truly someone who could have said, like those guys said in that beer commercial years ago, when they're sitting out there and they're drinking their beer and the guy looks over at the other one and says, you know, John, or whatever he says, it doesn't, what did he say? Does anybody know? It doesn't get any better than this. That's nothing's better than this. Just relaxing, with our beer. Well, Simeon was a man who could say truly, absolutely, 100%, it don't get any better than this. He had waited, and buddy, it was worth the wait. Now, here's the wonderful thing about this story as it relates to us, as it relates to you and me. We don't have to wait anymore. As Rick mentioned this morning in the opening comments, there you are, he's come, he's here, he lives. God broke into this world. Heaven invaded this earth. The very temple that they're walking into, the temple represented the presence of God. And in that temple was the Holy of Holies that represented the very presence of God. So in a sense, the temple represents a place where heaven and earth, they come together. But they knew that that was not the dwelling place of God. But in a sense, that's where God sat down, where God lived. I'm speaking metaphorically. But in Jesus, He is the temple. He is the divine one who is the very presence that the temple represented. They waited. Simeon waited. Jesus came. We don't have to wait anymore. He is Emmanuel. He is God with us. And while He did His work and His ministry, and He went to a cross and He died and was raised from the dead, and He reigns right now forever and ever, He is present with us right now today. He is in our midst. Jesus lives. As Simeon says in the text, a hope for the Gentiles. That's the first time any of the words of the people in the Jesus story of His birth, the first time anybody mentions the Gentiles. And so there's this vision that Simeon has of not only a blessing for Israel, the nation of Israel. There's this vision that he has based on Old Testament teaching that this baby, this child, means the salvation not just of a nation, but the salvation of the world. Which brings us to another question. What will you do with Jesus? He's here. He's here. He's present right now. He's there and He's here. Those of you who are viewing online, He's there. He's in your midst. And that presence and that entrance into the world brings with it a reality for us in answering this question, what do we do with Him? What do we do with Jesus? So, as Simeon speaks, it says in verse 33, the child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, this child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too. Those are some tough words. Those are some good words, some realistic words, but those are some very tough words too. Simeon says, this person, this child who will grow up and have a ministry and teach and call people to follow the God of light and himself as the Son of God is not going to be received well by everyone. This child is a sign of the rising of some good news, but also the fall of some. And not everybody is going to love him. He's going to be spoken against at times. But one thing for sure that he will do is he will reveal the hearts of people. What will you do with Jesus? Where's your heart? If you believe Jesus is the Son of God, if you believed that he was raised from the dead and lives now forever and ever, listen, the time is right for you not only to wait, but to be willing. And so I call upon you to think about where you are right now. If you believe and you believe who he is, and yet you haven't committed your life to him and submitted to him in baptism, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? If you believe, you may not be there right now, right in that spot, here in this assembly, or those of you who are online. I'm sure there are some who are still struggling with belief and faith in who Jesus is. And all I can say to you is keep digging, keep looking, keep searching, because I believe in that search and that discovery, if you will allow yourself to find the real Jesus, not the commercialized Jesus, not the pretend Jesus, not the one who many times is filled with traditions or ideas or things about his life that aren't really about who he is. But if you find and discover the real Jesus and your heart goes to him, let me tell you this, you won't be disappointed. He won't let you down. People may let you down. Circumstances you face may test your mettle, but he won't let you down. If you're a disciple of Christ, you believe Jesus, please do not forget the absolute thrill of what it means to live knowing this one who Simeon is so full of excitement and eagerness to share. Has your heart grown a little cold? Do you still know and feel and experience the joy and the thrill and excitement of what it means now to be not only his child, a follower of Jesus, but to be his temple? You're the temple of the Holy Spirit. And as you go to his word and feed on his word and grow in him, the Spirit is at work in your life to open doors for you, to make this life an adventure as you're led by the Spirit. And as you do that and you keep your eyes open, God's going to surprise you. As I mentioned last week, sometimes he will surprise you in ways you never imagined. But you need to be engaged and you need to be paying attention. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Okay, I want to close this morning with a couple of quick hits. Just in terms of some challenge and application of what's going on in this text. The first thing relates to Joseph and Mary and what they're doing. And I don't have a lot of time to get into it this morning, but they're going to the temple. And they're going to the temple to dedicate, to consecrate, to offer that boy to God. Not that other children back in this day were not offered to God and recognized, but there was something special in the culture of that day, with the family name being carried along and the future leader of the family clan, that firstborn son, there was something that was especially poignant about that moment. But with us, whether it's the firstborn son or the firstborn daughter or the thirdborn daughter or the secondborn son, the principle is still the same. God is calling you. I want to challenge you parents. I know sometimes we think, wow, it must have been hard being Mary and Joseph. It was hard being Mary and Joseph. Can you imagine? This is the Son of God. The responsibility, the weight, the anxiousness, the feeling like, how can I do this? But what God is calling you to do today as a parent is no different from what God was calling Mary and Joseph to do. You are to view that child, that baby, that toddler, that six-year-old, that teenager with the same concern and devotion about doing the right thing for this child and sharing faith with this child, in being real to this child in a way that faith is a part of your life, so that child has the best chance in a tough, tough world. So that may speak to you related to your involvement in the church body. In being disconnected from the church body, you are taking an opportunity not only for yourself but for your children to be connected with others who share the same faith. And while a lot of other activities that they may do, school, sports, whatever that is, those are all important, and we are to live for God's glory in all of those things. But to live for those things to the exclusion of what a real commitment and faith in our lives and in the life of the body that we are connected to, we need to think about that. If you live a faith as a parent that's willing and waiting, and your children know it, and they see it, you're giving them the gift that keeps on giving. So what do you plan on giving them this Christmas? The gift of faith and commitment as parents, as fathers who are servant leaders in the home. That's what matters. And last point here I want to make pretty quickly. That's this. Those of you who are older. Now, I don't know how many of you put yourself in that category. When does one officially become old? When do you move from middle age to old person? Is it 60? How about it, Nora? Is it 60?
Sometime after
62. Okay, I know how old you are. Okay, whether 84, 62, 75, God is not done with you yet. And I know sometimes we think, hey, I'm going to get older now. I'm going to hit retirement. I'm going to enjoy myself a little bit, which you should. There's nothing wrong with that. Not at all. Nothing wrong. But we don't retire from God's work and call in our lives. And don't you find it interesting here that God is using Simeon? And if you read a little bit more, you read about a widow woman there named Anna, and she was a prophetess, and she's in the temple all the time, and she had a word to speak to Mary and Joseph as well. God is using older people to bless a younger couple. Mary and Joseph needed this from them. And there are younger people, there are young families who need you to be in their lives and bless their lives in the same way that these two people were committed to blessing Mary and Joseph. So stay engaged. Sometimes you hear older people say something like, well, you know, young people, they're the future of the church. And that's true. I get it. But listen, for Simeon, the future was now. And God used him. For Anna, the future is now. And God used her at her age. Zechariah and Elizabeth, older people. God's using them in a way that made a profound difference. And so Simeon says, I'm ready, Lord, take me. I've seen it. But I don't know what the Lord did. He may have lived 5 more years and God may have still been using him. For those of you who are older, our children, our families, our church needs your involvement and words of wisdom and words of hope. And sometimes they may be tough words. Simeon spoke a few tough words here too. Hard words. But he spoke the truth. Willing and waiting. Willing and waiting. What are you waiting for? You know this same Jesus who was born and lived on this earth, went to a cross and died, was put in a tomb and raised, proved beyond a shadow of a doubt he was real, ascended to the Father, and now lives and reigns to intervene for us. He is present with us today, within us, through his Holy Spirit, so we are not alone. But the Bible says that he is coming back. And the thought struck me as I was putting these thoughts together. What if we, like Simeon, think about it. What if we, like Simeon, knew that Jesus was coming back before we died? Now, you don't know that. We don't know that. We know he's coming back, right? We know there'll be a judgment and a separation. Some will be living with God forever and ever and ever, and some will be separated from him, sadly, forever and ever and ever. But whether he does or whether he doesn't, that shouldn't make any difference. We should be living right now, this day, this moment, as if we knew he was coming back today. For you, when he does come, will it be worth the wait? Will it be worth the wait? It all depends on what you're waiting for.